Blog Talk Radio. Okay, can everybody hear me now? We're having some problems here with Skype tonight. Let me check the chat and see if anyone can hear me. Hello, someone in chat? Hello, I've called back into the show. Okay, great. Finally, somebody. Thank you. All right. Now, I don't know what the problem is tonight, but I'm not going to be using Skype. I'll be using the regular telephone, and that is not a good sign. Every time I try to do something on astrology, something goes wrong. So, anyway, let me resume where I was at. Welcome, everybody. This is a special edition of the Dragon's Lair on Renegade Broadcasting, the best source for factual information on the planet. The song you just heard was by the Fifth Dimension from 1967. Now, it was very popular at the time, and however, is really full of a bunch of nonsense about astrology as well as the age of Aquarius. Some New Age adherents explicitly describe the New Age as a return of some paradisiacal Eden. I knew I'd screw up on that word. A guy named Joel Kramer in a yoga journal in 1980 wrote, "In the mid-60s, many people believed that we were on the verge of an exciting and glorious new age in human evolution. The popular song Aquarius captured the spirit. Many of us naively expected the human race to smoothly and quickly cultivate the earth into a new Eden." In a poem entitled Age of Aquarius, a New Age adherent named Cecil Hickman wrote in 2005, "A future to dream, we live in peace and love," and so on, all united on the planet, and love will live, prejudice cease, all of this good nonsense. The Age of Aquarius has become somewhat of an urban legend ever since the theatrical production of Hair proclaimed this as the dawning of the Age of Aquarius. Most newspapers and comments on blogs, etc., clearly relate the dawning of the Age of Aquarius to the 1960s and 70s when Hair first appeared. In addition, many people are disappointed with the direction the world has taken since those so-called inspiring times. Nevertheless, where the hell is the goddamn Age of Aquarius anyway? Okay. Well, anyway, while people are ready to accept the Aquarian Age commencing in the 60s and 70s as a foregone conclusion, rarely does anyone check the sources of such claims about the Aquarian's age. The song's lyrics contain the following: "When the moon is in the seventh house and Jupiter aligns with Mars, then peace will guide the planets and love will steer the stars." While it is certainly a nice melody, from an astrological perspective, it is nonsense. The position of the moon in the seventh house, 11th house, or any house, has no relationship in any way with the age of Aquarius. Jupiter aligning with Mars, in other words, a conjunction, happens every year or so. No big deal. And this has no relationship to the age of Aquarius. Excuse me. I'm not going to be able to mute tonight, so you're going to be able to have to hear my coughs. There is no reason why the Aquarius song should maintain astrological integrity due to poetic license. However, this license has continued unabated in the general public's perception of what has become, again, an urban legend. This poetic license associated with the age of Aquarius is so strong that probably in excess of 90% of everything ever stated about the age of Aquarius is simply poetic license. In other words, if a concept about the Aquarian age sounds good, it must be true. This approach has not only been maintained by the general public, but unfortunately by most astrologers. It is more likely than not that anyone states about the Aquarian age is pure myth. This is very unfortunate. The repercussion of this myth-laden age of Aquarius is that misinformation spreads about the Aquarian age, and it prevents people from really seeing the Aquarian age in its own right. Visualize an Aquarian sheep with a Pisces woolen cloak thrown over it. This is the situation today with urban myths about the Aquarian age. The Aquarian Age does not need the assistance of Pisces. The Aquarian Age does not need to recreate the mythical Garden of Eden to have a great age. The Aquarian Age does not require the comical spectacle of humanity all being enlightened, who will then collect all the garbage if everybody becomes enlightened, right? Yeah, well, so anyway, the Aquarian Age can stand on its own feet and display its self-esteem about its Aquarian archetypes that will predominate in the age of Aquarius. So don't let Pisces pull the wool over your eyes. This is what has been done to the Aquarian Age, and this is what Pisces is good at, delusion and deception. I've taken an extraction of some of the lyrics here, and I've tried to correlate their meanings to the different signs of the zodiac. And this should kind of give you an idea of just how screwed up the lyrics to that song are. Peace will guide the planets. Well, that's more related to Libra. And love will steer the stars. Well, that also is more related to Libra. Harmony and understanding. Well, harmony would be Libra, and understanding would be Gemini. Let me light the cigarette. Looks like it's going to be another interesting night here trying to do this show. So, anyway, sympathy and trust abounding. Well, sympathy would be Pisces. Trust abounding would also be Pisces. The golden living dreams of visions. Well, golden living dreams would be Leo, and visions would be Pisces. The mystic crystal revelation. Well, okay, Pisces. And the mind's true liberation. Well, that's all Aquarius, yes. As our hearts go beating through the night. Well, that would be more like Leo. We dance until the dawn of the day. Well, that would be a Piscean concept. To be the bearers of the water. Well, that's certainly Aquarius. Our light will lead the way. That really probably correlates more to Leo. We are the spirit of the age of Aquarius. Well, that sounds like something that would come from the Piscean age. Angelic illumination, Pisces. Rising fiery constellation, definitely Aries. Traveling our starry courses, guided by the cosmic force, or forces, that would be Pisces. Oh, care for us, Aquarius. Well, that sounds something like a Pisces, what a Pisces would say. Okay, anyway, removing repetitive courses and lines, the archetypal information that the song is telling us indicates 11 instances of Pisces, 3 of Libra, 3 of Leo, Aquarius 2, Aries 1, and Gemini 1. Of the 21 instances from the above lyrics that can be related to astrological archetypes, 52% to relate to Pisces and 10% to Aquarius. What the hell, right? So, anyway, okay. All right. I think it would be more accustomed to, or rather not accustomed, I think it would be more akin to, say, perfected man, perhaps. I think that's what would be more Aquarian. In other words, we've gone through this process of delusion and confusion, and we have finally found our way. Vishnu represents the female aspect of Shiva, the male aspect of the soul. That unified and generated Brahma, the one God, with three parts. The tail of the egg of Brahma is the same. It represents the linga being encased, thus unified with the yoni, which generated Brahma, the perfected soul. More on this at another time. So anyway, but each god also had their own traditions where they occupy the generated position because it is the same god in heliognostic culture, just in different regions, just over time with cultural diffusion and confusion. I'll add that part to it. I didn't see that sentence there. It was kind of down a little bit. So anyway, so now a new age has started, which is what is called the Age of Aquarius, meaning the pitcher carrier of spiritual holy water that is the work of the Kundalini. Spirituality is Pisces. Likewise, all psychic phenomena and subtle forces such as the Kundalini. It is fascinating that most comments, statements, expectations about the Age of Aquarius promote Pisces. few astrologers noticed this extreme contradiction, but the moment of misinformation about Pisces' colored age of Aquarius is so strong that it continues like a never-ending soap opera. Occasionally, someone refers to Aquarian archetypes in their projection of the age of Aquarius, but they are a small minority. Aquarius is the archetype in our consciousness that observes life in a detached way. In general, Aquarius, as well as its ruling planet, which is Uranus, covers electronics, computers, anything that is electric, unusual, new, in advance of everybody else, different, so on and so forth. And so, in a certain kind of sense, we do really see the beginnings of what could be called the Aquarian Age, going back from probably about maybe sometime in the 1960s, perhaps even the mid-1960s, when we had an elevated level of consciousness at that time from our previous levels. So anyway, we do see evidence of Aquarius in our culture, but it is not the primary driving energy quite yet. It's getting there. The Piscean faith-based energy is still driving the collective consciousness. However, people like us are pushing these issues strongly. Anyone willing to still accommodate these concepts are really spinning their wheels and wasting time and resources. They really need to start looking towards the future. And I say that in full regard to religious aspects as well, because that's ultimately what Christianity is a Piscean concept, which is essentially the self-sacrifice. And that's not going to get us anywhere. Okay, the Aquarius, which is ruled by the planet Uranus, represents rebellion. And that's what I want to talk about tonight. When that changes, when people start realizing that we are no longer in a Piscean age, then I'll agree we are in the age of Aquarius. However, I believe that we are truly starting to see that now. And with the combination of two of the outer planets, Uranus and Pluto, I see that manifesting. And very soon, by the way. Pluto has moved into an Earth sign, Capricorn, which is ruled by Saturn. Now, Pluto represents death and regeneration. Pluto is the most powerful planet in its effects. Thus, it will shake these crystallized Saturnian earthly structures beyond recognition. Uranus has moved into a fire sign, Aries. And Aries has little patience and is headstrong and is ruled by Mars, which represents war. Much of what will be presented in these two shows today and Friday will relate to these concepts, and I will use the work of others to demonstrate this. And again, I hope everybody's had a chance to watch Quantum Astrology, because that really does correlate to some of the things I'm talking about. Now, usually before an age change occurs, there's a period where the old age starts to fizzle and the new age starts to come in, and there's sort of an overlap, and that's probably ultimately what the relation is to this Aquarius and Pisces clothing concept that is really where we're at or have been at the moment. Excuse me. I also want to emphasize that we're moving into a 2,500-year evolutionary process, the age of Aquarius, the age of rebellion. Thus, the necessary evolutionary adjustments will take a little time to accomplish. Not going to happen overnight. However, there is also a starting point, and that's where we are now. Now, so what I want to do next here is comment on how these ideas relate to some of the things that Mike has been saying in some of his shows and some of his news topics that he's discussed. He said that he probably thinks that we probably have about maybe 5 years or so before something or another really starts to happen one way or another, and either we pull ourselves up by our bootstraps and get this going, or we wind up in the toilet, one of the two. And there is a reason for that 5-year period that he has discussed, and I want to get into that tonight. So, anyway, I also want to mention before I get to my usual spiel that I do at the beginning of a show, I was listening to an astrologer being interviewed on another show here not too long ago, and he was talking about the Mayan calendar. And he was suggesting that the Mayan, as good as the Mayans were, their calendar was about 12 years off. And so all of this 2012 stuff really happened about the turn of the century. This was the same astrologer that I had mentioned on another show that I had called into that suggested that Obama was going to win the election and that he had not been wrong in I don't know how many years, well over 20 years, perhaps going to 30. So anyway, let's move on. For the record, today is April 9th, 2013 CE on our screwed-up Christian calendar. The sun is at 19 degrees Aries. Be sure and give a listen to all the other hosts here on Renegade. Until further notice, Kyle is on Mondays to be determined and or Wild Card Tuesdays with a guest host or another regular host. Lou is now on Wednesdays. Mike on Thursdays. And I want to welcome again Siegfried on Fridays. Now, he won't be starting this Friday. I will be doing the part two to this, which is going to be the actually it's the third astrology show on Friday. We have the roundtable on Saturdays, me, of course, on Sundays. Now, again, I won't monitor the chat, however, except unless there's some sort of a problem, and we've already run into a few of them. So, anyway, as you know, I'll glance at it during breaks, and I'll be drinking my water and smoking here where I'm sitting. You'll have to hear my coughs and my drinking tonight. Again, some sort of issue with Skype. Now, again, we have a chat at RenegadeBroadcasting.com, and I believe we have a live feed. There's also a chat at RenegadeBroadcasting.chatango.com, and also there's a chat over at AlternativeSocial.com, the social network that Kyle created. And if you're not part of that, why not? And I also want to direct everybody's attention again to NationalProtectionism.com. Again, I have no personal website or blog. I'd probably not have a life if I did, between my work and doing these shows and other things. No phone calls for tonight. Definitely not tonight. Got to get this Skype issue resolved. And there's way too much material to cover. The next astrology again show will be on Friday, and I was thinking of taking calls then. Hopefully we'll get the Skype issues worked out in the meantime. That depends on how fast I can get through all the material as well. So, anyway, if you want to contact me, you can reach me at magus_18@geocities.com. You can, if you want on my e-list, just write subscribe, send me an email, or you can just write me. Can't guarantee I'll be getting around to all my emails. I'll be sending out mailings to my list from my last show here real soon, just in case you're wondering why you haven't received anything yet. And the cat is somewhere. I don't see her at the moment, but she was on the back of my chair. So anyway, and again, I hope everybody has had a chance to see Quantum Astrology by now. Okay, I'm not doing exactly the show I originally intended. it hadn't started that way anyway. It's almost like a continuation of the first one. Anyway, as I've had a chance, as I have a chance now to do two shows close together because of scheduling, I can essentially kind of make this one big show spread out over two. So anyway, we'll try to dig a little bit deeper than I originally intended as well. Also, I'll get into some of the basics, so I don't want to leave everyone just kind of hanging from the first show. But I want to discuss some issues first and talk to you about a few things before we actually get into the main topics that I really wanted to present, which have to do with the correlation of the transits of the planet Pluto, or planetoid, if you want to call it that, and the planet Uranus, and some of their current transits that we are experiencing now and in the future. So anyway, let me see if I can find a song here to play, and we'll be back in a few. Okay, I'm back. And Bad Moon Rising by Creedence Clearwater Revival. Okay. I was trying to find one of my songs here that I wanted to play next time around, but I can't find it for some reason, and I know I uploaded it. So anyway, this show is going to hopefully go a little bit smoother, but I can't find that one song. So anyway, what I wanted to start with here was the phrase, as above, so below. Many of you have heard that, and ultimately that also correlates to, I believe it is called the Lord's Prayer in the Bible, on earth as it is in heaven, again, as above, so below. And ultimately, the Bible, again, is essentially astrotheology and astrology for the most part. And it's a stolen text and perverted, but there are still some things in it that are worth checking into. I have a quote here made by J.P. Morgan. I'm going to go by memory because I usually have some of these quotes memorized, but I don't have it printed out in front of me. But it goes something along the lines of, millionaires do not consult astrologers, billionaires do. So anyway, let's move on here. What I wanted to discuss about astrology in general, too, is that many years ago, probably I would say before the time that I was born, astrology was more of a right-wing tool, and sometime during the 1960s, that has switched. And most of your astrologers today are really, they have just totally bought into the whole leftist concept, or if you want to use the word, liberal concept of everything. And many of them will not buy into conspiracies. And so, as I've mentioned before, you know, I've been thrown out of many astrology forums by bringing in conspiracy issues. But I did want to reiterate again that, you know, the people running this planet have more advanced astrology knowledge than what we have, and they've only allowed out just enough to make it. It's still very usable, put it that way. There's only so much they can hide, but they still have enough that they can use to manipulate from behind the scenes. And as I've mentioned before, they'll take these periods of time when they know that things are due to change on this planet, and they will manipulate them from behind the scenes so as to steer it another direction. We'll discuss that a little more in a little bit. But being an occultist and understanding the subject more than any other aspect of the occult, in terms of mastery at least, you know, I've been doing this since probably about 1988, and so and that's more than I've been into anything else in the occult. And being lucky enough to understand the agenda that's being foisted upon us, I sort of have a unique perspective. Most astrologers tend to dismiss what we know as conspiracy theory and just reject it outright. You know, I'm sure there are bound to be some others out there like me, but we do tend to get silenced because of the erroneous control of information and Christianity and leftists, many of those who just can't see the trees for the forest. What I wanted to mention next was that fact that many of our founding fathers were Masons, Satanists, Luciferians, occultists, etc. And this country was structurally set up to function in an astrological manner. And I'll cite you an example. And oh, by the way, I just want to say something real quick. I do see a couple of callers here, but if you're calling in to listen, that's fine. But actually, there's just one. I'm not going to be taking calls tonight. I will try to take some, most likely, on my next show on Friday. However, tonight, you know, I'm not. So if you're just listening, that's fine. But I'm not going to take a call. So anyway, our founding fathers set up the what is called a grand trine in the, I don't want to exactly say chart per se, but what they did was they set up a birth date, which is July 4th. And then they set up an election day, which is usually the first week in November. And then they set up the inauguration time, for the president. Now, each one of these are in water signs. You have July 4th for Independence Day, and usually Election Day is approximately around November 4th. And then, if I remember correctly, Inauguration Day was March 4th. And these are in the very middle of all water signs, and they all represent a trine aspect, which is 120 degrees from each other. And unfortunately, the inauguration date has been perverted and changed. And this, if I remember correctly, was done under President Roosevelt, not Teddy, but Franklin. And so what I want to say along those lines is that since the inauguration date has been changed, it seems as though every president has died in office in a 20-year cycle since then. Now, Reagan, of course, did not, and, of course, neither did Bush. And I'll give an explanation on both of these here. Ronald Reagan and whatever his wife's name was, Nancy, I don't know if he was, but she certainly was. But it was reported that Ronald Reagan held two inauguration addresses, not addresses, two different inauguration ceremonies. He held one when he had to, according to the new date, and he had another one on the normal scheduled date that he would have taken office under the original Constitution before the amendment changed that. And his belief was, knowing that he was coming in the next 20-year cycle after Kennedy being assassinated and, of course, the death of Roosevelt before that, that he his turn was due. And, of course, as we all know, they attempted to kill him, but he did survive. Now, also, too, if you look at the next cycle, that would have been George Bush. Now, what seems to have happened in correlation to that is that there was a 20-year cycle of the two outer planets of Saturn and Jupiter, and they will conjunct each other every 20 years, and that seems to correspond to this cycle. However, when George Bush Jr. got into office, the cycle shifted into an Earth sign, and so it changed the cycle that it was in, which the conjunction was, I believe, then in Taurus, and previously it had been in Aries. And so that may have had some sort of an effect on it. And, of course, we won't know until the 2020 about what would happen. Of course, that's all presuming everything is still status quo, which, of course, we know that probably will not be. Now, there was another president, too, by the way, who was into astrology, and that was President Teddy Roosevelt. He actually had his chart enlarged and hung on the wall of the White House while he was president. He was into it that much. Now, we discussed a little bit earlier here, a few minutes ago, about the 1960s. Well, I think the 1960s is a perfect example of what happens regarding manipulation by the enemy. The 1960s, and I don't remember which specific conjunction it was, there was a couple of actual major things that happened astrologically during that time, and that was roughly 1965. And if one looks back at that period, one could just see everything that happened, and I'm not even going to run down the list, to see how everything in the world, in our society, has changed significantly since then. And it was all due to a raising of consciousness, in part, for the most part. Now, it's clear, for example, that you have movements like the hippie movement that had actually, this movement goes back to Germany in the 1930s under the Third Reich. And that movement became perverted beginning in the 1950s, but then it was started to really be pushed in the mid-1960s. And we see the results of that. You know, I'm all for change in consciousness, and certainly I did not want to continue living the way that I think that people lived in the 1950s. You know, we certainly needed a lot more freedom, and everybody was really a lot more uptight then, and, you know, the religious thing that, you know, things started to change religiously, and I mean, this list just goes on and on and on. We were certainly due for something like that, but it was perverted, And if you just listen to the show that Mike and Siegfried did on the 1960s, I'm sure there's going to be that probably will be on file somewhere. I know that network no longer exists. It was taken off of Blog Talk. But that show is really a great show, and someone needs to make sure that gets uploaded again. And, in fact, I would like to hear those two guys get together and do a part two on the 1960s, because I know they did not have enough time to cover all of it. So, moving on. Doctors used to have to, well, they still do, they take an oath, but I believe it's called the Hippocratic Oath. Most doctors used to have to take an oath that actually included an astrological reference in it. Now, I don't have this in front of me. I don't see a need to actually quote it. But doctors in the past had to know astrology in order to properly practice medicine. If you look at, if you go over to, if you're not there already, and if you go over to the show website on Blog Talk, right at the moment, you'll see, if you put your mouse over the image that you see there, you can actually get the screen to still instead of rotating all of those images out. You'll see an image of a body with its arms stretched out, and then you'll see on one side a list of the signs, and on the right the parts of the body that it covers. You'll be able to see how each sign, again, as above, so below, and everything is really essentially the microcosm is in the macrocosm and vice versa, polarity and paradox, you'll see that everything in your body also correlates to the astrological signs as well. This also includes all of your body's systems and processes. You know, for example, in general, you know, Aries rules the head, Taurus rules the neck, so on and so forth. And then, you know, you get down to the lower parts of the body, and, you know, Venus and Libra rule the kidneys, Scorpio rules the reproductive organs and so forth. Well, then you also look at the process, for example, and say, well, the process of elimination is a scorpionic process. And so the two processes of elimination are ruled by Scorpio. And so if you get an astrology book, a good astrology book, most will give you some basic information regarding this, and it is worth knowing. And I'm not going to get into my own specific details of any of some of my medical conditions in the past, but you can certainly correlate things that have happened to you and your health based upon the astrological occurrences that are going on in your birth chart and the transits that happen to them. Now, when I say transits, what I mean is this. If you get a chart made, it shows, again, a pie graph, 12 signs, and 12 houses. And you'll see the planets all located in different places. And basically, someone just learning astrology, just starting out. You know, what you need to do if you get a chart made is you need to first look at the house structure and look at all the 12 houses and see what signs are on these houses. And then what you need to do, too, is look at all of the planets where they are at. And then you need to look at where the planets are in each house and look up the information that corresponds to that. Then you also need to look up where all of the planets are in each sign. And again, like I've said before, you had a sign on each house. Well, you need to research every sign on every house. And if you buy a good astrology book, it will cover most of that. And then after that, you have what are called aspects. And that these are mathematical, or actually I would say more precisely geometric relationships to the planets, to each other, and all of the sensitive points in the chart. And all of your basic starter astrology books will at least allow you to go through those. There's so much else in there that one can go into that I could probably talk for several hours on that, but I would be talking over everybody's heads at this point. And so, needless to say, I want to go ahead and move on a little bit here. Now, what I want to talk about next is, okay, well, how do you get your birth certificate? Well, you know, you have to know where you were born, You have to know what day you were born. You have to know what time you were born. And what an astrologer does, and I won't get into this too deeply, but they calculate the chart based on where you are at on the planet. Now, where does this information come from? Well, you get it from a birth certificate, right? Well, I'm gonna elaborate on that just a little bit. In the past, when people were born, typically they would record the birth date in the family Bible, and most people never really noted specifically the time of the day. Most people were not actually into astrology, and when people tried to practice it, usually they had to go through a rectification process of trial and error to try to get an accurate chart for when they were born. But the point I want to make here, and by the way, that rectification process still can be used today, especially on older people whose names were only in the Bible, say like maybe some of your grandparents or great-grandparents. But if you look at your birth certificate today, it contains the actual time that you were born. Now, why would they put that on there? Whoever asked you, well, what time were you born? Well, unless somebody tries to correlate, well, if you're a morning person, maybe you were born in the morning, or if you were a evening person, you were born in the evening or something, you know, whatever your favorite time of the day or when you function best is. But ultimately, there really is no need to have your birth time on your birth certificate. I mean, again, nobody ever asks you that. You know, I mean, you get asked what your birthday is all the time, and certainly everybody needs to know, well, when they were born, so you know how old you are. Well, back at the point when they decided to start keeping records in more detail, you know, I think there was probably a little bit more of an ulterior motive behind this as well. Because, again, in order to properly make an astrology chart for yourself, you have to know what time you were born. Well, now, who would see this information unless you show it to them? Well, only government officials for the most part. Now, I believe the Church of Latter-day Saints probably keeps records of everybody. Let me light this cigarette. Hold on. But the otherwise, you know, how do you get hold of a birth certificate? It's really kind of hard to do. You have to go through this process of going down to wherever you're local government agency that handles this, and you have to show proper identification. You have to be able to specify what hospital you were born, and you have to know your parents' full names, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, the government can look up anything they want on you. Now, my point in saying this is this. Your birth chart is your thumbprint. It is your inheritance into this current existence that you are in. And so, in a certain kind of way, this information can be used against you. Now, if you become a little bit more adept on the subject, you will begin to understand what I'm saying. But in general, one typically should not go around flashing their astrology chart to just any Tom, Dick, and Harry on the planet. If you go to an astrologer and have it done, you know, certainly there's no big deal on that. You're dealing with people who are generally honest. But my point here is this. When you start getting into things that we discuss here on this network, you don't go around saying, well, I was born on this day at this time at this location. And, of course, anyone out there listening who really is part of the upper-level government structure can get that. But maybe some of the lowers can't. But you certainly don't want anyone practicing black magic on you by having this information, okay? So I just thought I would mention that. Now, there's also what most people, a lot of people actually who have heard anything about astrology have heard of the Saturn return. Well, I'm not going to get into that tonight, probably. I'll probably wait till next week, and I'll discuss that a little bit. And I think I mentioned it briefly on the previous show. But that's a very important, and if you live long enough, you may get three Saturn returns in a lifetime. Usually most people get two, about every 29 and a half years. So anyway, what I wanted to mention, though, is that there are certainly some other useful things that can work to your advantage by having your chart. You can practice magic yourself if you know when you're going to have a favorable period. Well, you can do things to your advantage. Let's say you know you're going to have a period of time in advance where maybe romantic interests would be certainly more advantageous than they would at other times, and maybe you haven't been having too good of luck during most of these other times, but you can see a period of time where your luck will actually change, and you can actually emphasize that and try to work with whatever energies that you're dealing with. And if you say you need a job, well, you know, like I mentioned, I think, in the other show, your Mars return, whenever Mars transits, it comes back to the point where it was when you were born, you can use this point as a new beginning, as well as Mars conjuncting the first house. Now, there are some other things about astrology I could discuss. For example, there are other types of transits. Now, what exactly is a transit? A transit is where the planet goes through the zodiac in relation to its position of the Earth from the perspective of the Earth, because you are on the Earth. And it will actually go, each planet will go through the zodiac, and it will form different mathematical aspects to that. Now, that is what is just typically referred to as a transit. There's some other things that are called secondary progressions, solar arc progressions, and then there is actually declinations that are actually considered transits, so to speak. The declinations essentially is how high or low above the horizon, so to speak, or the the belt around the planet that I'll think of it in a minute. Anyway, how high or above below that point, and there you can interpret things from that as well in transit as well as from your birth. But the other two, the secondary progression and the solar arc progression, are actually based upon concept of a day to a year. And what an astrologer has to do if they don't have a software program is that they have a book that's called an ephemeris. And what it does is it lists the positions of every planet for every day for whatever given period of time that ephemeris was for. And so let's say you look up your birthday and, oh, the sun is at such and such here, okay, and then Mercury is at such and such. Now, the moon, you almost have to have an astrology program to do because it moves so fast. And then you look at Mercury, where is it, blah, 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 Venus, blah, 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 and so on. Now, that being said, what I mean by a day per year means that essentially, well, if you look at your birthday, then you look at the day that follows it. Where are the planets then? Well, that would represent 1 year of life, so to speak, from when you were born. And then you go 2 days, well, that's your second year, and so on and so forth. But you really need an astrology program to see where things are as they progress from each year, because you not only do you look at your birthday, you look at the all the rest of the year or the days and the time in between of the planets, and that's called a secondary progression, and you interpret those the way you would a transit. And I'll give you an example of a transit. A transit would be, say, for example, Venus, you have Venus at 23 degrees of a particular sign, and let's say you have Mercury at, say, 27 degrees of that same sign. Well, when Venus crosses Mercury, that's called a conjunction. And your main aspects are conjunctions, then oppositions, squares, trines, what's called a quincux, so that's 150 degrees, and then a sextile. So a conjunction is zero. It's come back around and it's hit it, and then each one of these have separating and approaching aspects, okay? Once a planet gets past 180 degrees, it is then therefore approaching. When a planet is leaving, it is separating. So my point being here is that you never have a retrograde condition, which means essentially that you're looking at a planet from Earth in the sky and it appears to be going backwards because the Earth is also moving around the sun. And during these retrograde periods, the expressions of these planets are slower because they do not move as fast as they do when they are moving in direct motion. Now, I kind of went off in a different direction there. So, but the point being, get back to the progressions, is that they operate like a regular transit does. And so you could look up in a book a list of transits, a list of occurrences, such as a situation where you have a conjunction or an opposition. You look up this planet, square that planet, etc. And so, but the secondary progressions, all you have to really kind of do is get an astrology program, but you can still look in the ephemeris and see. Now, there's also what is called a solar arc transit. Now, the solar arc transit is similar to a secondary progression. Now, if you were to have a program in front of you, and I will speak as if you did, if you had a secondary progression, you would notice real quickly that the sun moves approximately 1 degree a day, and then the moon moves very fast, and it takes approximately 29 and a half years to go through the whole cycle. And you will experience several of these just like you do your Saturn return. In fact, the moon's secondary progression actually mimics the time cycle of the Saturn return. But you would also notice, too, that you would see Mercury moves pretty quick. But then you start looking at the outer planets, and, man, they don't go anywhere, you know, in one lifetime, you know. Because they move so slow, and they go have a retrograde period every year, that they may only move a few degrees over the course of a lifetime, and so not much happens with the outer planets on secondary progressions. But when you look at solar arcs, if you look at the sun again, it's like on secondary progression, it moves a degree a day. Well, what you do is you take all the rest of the planets and you move them with the sun. And then the planets would then move a degree a day. And ironically, you would think, well, how does this work? This has no basis in reality. However, it does. And if one understands the occult, one can see what I was saying before about everything being a reflection of everything else. And as above, so below. And just the mere fact that you can look at your body and correlate every sign and every planet to it. You know that there is something to this. Let's see here. I'm going to throw something in, sort of a side note, because this happened to me on a secondary progression. I had had a Mars square natal, I had a transiting solar arc Uranus square a natal Mars in my life here just a few years ago. And you combine those two planets, and typically you get a lot of unexpected things that can happen. And usually if you don't know someone's birth time, you can use those two particular planets in general to try to reconcile and get an accurate birth time. Well, you know, a lot of things in my life had kind of like, you know, there was a lot of unexpected stuff here and there, but nothing really odd or ordinary that was just really, you know, way out there in any way. Well, I was well aware of this, of course, too. I was very conscious of it. And I usually go to Starbucks every night to get some coffee. I get iced coffee at night and put it in the refrigerator and drink it in the morning so I can wake up faster than drinking hot coffee. And so anyway, made my usual routine down to Starbucks. And I'm not going to get into all of the details that happened while I was there, but there was an armed robbery while I was there. And this occurred on a transiting Uranus square my natal Mars. Now, I'm going to add something a little bit off topic as to one of the events that did kind of happen during this robbery. Well, I didn't exactly want to stand there and take a chance that this guy was wanting my wallet or anything else from any of the other customers in there. You know, if he wants to rob Starbucks, fine, but I'm not going to sit there and be robbed. So, what I did, being a Satanist, and some of you may find this a little bit out there, but until you have some understanding of the power of the mind, you will you'll have doubts. But one day something may happen that will change things. I used the power of my mind to get out of this robbery. And, of course, I knew the odds that this guy could just, you know, turn his gun around at me instead of the woman behind the register and say on the ground or stop or hands up or whatever, you know. But I just looked at the guy. I stared at him. I focused my energies, and I looked right at him. And I essentially just walked out. Nothing happened. And we both maintained eye control until he was out of my view. Now, I don't recommend everybody doing that, but I took a chance. And, of course, if this guy, you know, like I said, he could have just turned his gun at me, but he didn't. He kept the gun at the lady at the register, and if she was smart, she could have taken it out of his hand, but she didn't do it. So, anyway, that occurred on that particular transit, and I thought I'd pass that little story along. Now, the, excuse me. One other thing I kind of wanted to mention here. There typically are 88 constellations. I think I mentioned that in the first show. But those are not all the ones that are on the path of the ecliptic. That was the word I was looking for earlier. And, again, that is the belt that goes around the Earth, roughly around the equator, but it fluctuates between the Tropic of Cancer and Tropic of Capricorn. And that circle or belt of animals is typically what we use as 12 signs or 12 constellations. Now, there is a 13th one that's kind of nested in there, but I'm not going to elaborate on that tonight. But the so 13 of those are right on the ecliptic, and all the rest are, of course, spread out all over if you're viewing from Earth. Now, ironically, there are 88 keys on a piano, and so that ought to tell you something there. So anyway, I let me see if I can find that song here that I was I uploaded. That should be here, but I do not see, unless somehow this thing has gotten out of order. And if it did, I'll just have to improvise and pick another song that I was planning on playing at another time. When I do believe that it looks like I'm going to have to do that. So, anyway, let me scroll back up here, and we will play another song. Hold on, someone is messaging me here. Okay, I see. I got it. Okay, all right. So, anyway, I'm going to go ahead and pick one, and I guess if you'll notice, you'll notice that the songs that I've been trying to play have something to do with astrology, and the one I'm looking for didn't, but it had a message to it. So, but anyway, what I'm going to go ahead and do here is I'm going to play some Pat Travers. Born, and this is called "Born Born in a Bad Sign," and many people have done this, and there are several versions of it, but I like the Pat Travers version. So I'm going to look for that other song while I play this one. So, anyway, now if I can get it to go, there we go. Thank you. Okay, again, that was Pat Travers, and that was one of the better versions of Born Under a Bad Sign. When I did a search for that to see how many different artists had done that, there was probably at least five. Creedence Clearwater Revival did one, and Jimi Hendrix did one too, actually, and I have that uploaded in here, and we'll play it at some point here. We've got approximately 48 minutes left in the show, and so what I want to start doing here, and this was, again, going to be part of my original show that I had planned, and I wanted to play some audio of some uploaded videos onto YouTube by an astrologer that I really like a lot, even though he has banned me from posting on his site because he doesn't accept my conspiracies. So this is about the entrance of the planet Pluto into the sign of Capricorn, which happened approximately 2008. And Pluto transits on average vary because of its odd orbit around the sun. And actually, Pluto is the only one of the planets that we know of, all of the known planets, to be more precise, that actually does not transit in the path of the ecliptic. It actually leaves it, and its orbit is very elliptical, and it tends to range from 11 years to 22 years in each sign, and it takes 240 years to go around the sun. And again, Pluto is a planet of death and transformation, regeneration. It is also has to do with sex as well, and reproduction. And so it is a mover and shaker on a world scale when it comes to consciousness of people on the planet. And of course, it does its own magic in your own chart. It is the most powerful transit of all of the planets, and it will not be denied. When it acts, and you cannot resist it. So, anyway, it's moving into the sign of Capricorn, and Capricorn is a very rigid sign. It is ruled by Saturn. It is structure. It is government. It is the powers that be. It is the wall that will not move. And so what you have is the planet who has the most power entering into the sign of what I just described, and when that happens, you get shakeups. Now, the American Revolution occurred during the time, last transit of Pluto into Capricorn. Now, of course, we were unaware of Pluto, or at least the general population was. The people running the planet may have known about it, but I don't know that to be the case. I would not think so. And in fact, I would think that the mere fact that most likely they may not have known of this planet at the time, that there was certainly no real hanky-panky regarding the American Revolution as being something that was controlled from the other side. No doubt there were agents involved on the that were playing both sides, as there always is during any kind of a war, et cetera, et cetera. But my point being is this. It was a grassroots event that occurred. And I see now all of the same seeds that were there at that time. And so what I want to do first here is I'm going to go ahead and play one of these clips. I've got a total of five, and two of them are about Pluto and Capricorn. And then I've got three more about Uranus and its transit of Aries. Now, before I play this, I'll go ahead and elaborate on Uranus and Aries as well. Uranus works very well with Pluto because Uranus likes to make sudden changes, new directions. It rules electricity. It rules technology. It's a liberation planet, and it works well with Pluto. And when you mix it with Mars, which is the sign, or rather the planet that rules the sign of Aries, and Uranus is transiting into Aries, and Uranus moved into Aries in 2008. And as I mentioned before, Uranus will stay in each sign approximately 7 years, so we don't have a whole lot of time for it to still be in Aries, but there is still some time left. But the point being is that events do occur that are that can still happen while Pluto is, or rather, that will happen while Pluto is in Capricorn, that are, where there is still time to happen with Uranus being in Aries. And hopefully y'all caught all that. So anyway, let me go ahead and play this clip, and hopefully you'll gain something from it. And again, this guy, let me briefly say this. This guy is, I wouldn't call him a leftist, but he's certainly not on the right, but he does tend to give fair assessments. And let's just let this roll and see what you think, and I'll comment on it afterwards.
Hello, everyone. My name is Carl. Welcome to this month's video. This month's video is about the most important astrological event of January. The most important astrological event, I think, of the entire year, and probably the most important astrological event for quite some time. Pluto is going to enter Capricorn on January 25th of this year. The Capricorn-Cancer axis, as I've discussed in previous videos, is one of the most sensitive axes in the heavens. And Pluto's activation or stimulation of the Cancer-Capricorn axis is one of the most serious and powerful transits that we experience. I prepared a fairly simple diagram here describing the part of Pluto's orbit that concerns us. You can see back in 1912, on the left-hand side of the chart, Pluto had just entered Cancer, and it began moving through the part of its orbit that supports top-down politics. During the 100 years or so, give or take, that it took Pluto to move through that part of its orbit, the people at the top of the social order concentrated ever more completely power and wealth in their hands. During the last 100 years or so, social power, economic power, political power has tended to concentrate toward the top of the social pyramid. Beginning now, as you can see on the right-hand side of the chart, Pluto is entering Capricorn. From this point on, for another 100 plus years, Pluto will support the empowerment of the people in the broad base and middle of the social pyramid. The social services that we rely upon are insurance for health and other kinds of things, our pensions, many, many social services, many aspects of the social safety net have just worn through, or participating in these things, making them available to ourselves, has just become prohibitively expensive. Beginning January 25th of this year, in a few weeks, Pluto will begin restoring power to the base of the social pyramid. And I think you can see peoples around the world anticipating this movement. For example, we see in Pakistan a stubborn, persistent, intense effort to wrest power from those at the top of the Pakistani government and restore it to the people. We see a similar kind of thing just happened in Kenya, where many people felt that, once again, those few at the top had tried and succeeded in stealing the most recent election. we saw at Burma, and you can probably think of other examples yourself. I understand this process in terms of human relations. As power and money, as the power and the resources to make things happen, has migrated toward the top of the social pyramid into the hands of a relative few people. Those in the broad base of the pyramid, where most of us live, have begun to really lack the power and the money, the resources, however you want to define those resources, to realize our potential, to express our love and our concern for other people, to make things happen in accordance with our love and our desires. And so I understand the crumbling of the base of the social pyramid as something that works through human relations, human love, and human desire. And these relationships have withered. Their meaning, their importance, have withered just as, or at the same time, as the power and the money has been drained away from the base of the pyramid. So, beginning January 25th, in a few weeks, Pluto will begin restoring power to the broad masses of the people, to us, those of us who form the base of this huge social pyramid. Pluto in Capricorn will disempower manipulative leaders, and it will nourish the people. As it does so, they will regain the power and the resources to act upon their impulses of love, the visions inspired by their desire for themselves, for their children, for their neighbors, for their nation. And as this process proceeds, I think we will experience it as a new wave of brotherly and sisterly love sweeping through the world, as we are able to express our love, as others are able to experience it, because once again, we have the power and the resources to make our love a reality for others. Thank you. Good night.
Okay, that was the first of the two videos. Now, I don't obviously buy into his love theory, okay? But again, this guy is not privy to the things that we know, nor is he on the right. But like I said, he's not certainly not a leftist. He's viewing it from his perspective. He's not a Christian either. He's into Eastern religions. And so in that sense, None of the Abrahamic nonsense influences his thinking in any way. Now, you notice the what he was talking about 1912 when Pluto entered into Cancer. Now, Cancer is the opposite sign of Capricorn. And, of course, about that time, you know, we got the ADL, we got the Federal Reserve, you know, they revised the elections for the Senate to where the states could no longer appoint senators, just a whole long laundry list. You've heard Mike talk about this. All of these things happened about the time that Pluto went into Cancer. And, of course, they also had all of these wars that happened, you know, World War I, World War II, you know, because it was in Cancer for a long time. Now, I believe it changed and moved out of Cancer by the time of World War II, but the point being is that the manipulators at the top knew this, okay, and they're counting on us not knowing this, but we know better now, don't we? So, now, the Capricorn Cancer axis, like you said, is a very important axis in any chart. If you take the pie, you divide it into 12, and remember, you start at 9 and draw a line from 9 to 3, that is the axis of the first house and the seventh house, the first house being at 9 o'clock. Okay, that's the most sensitive point, is the first house. The second most sensitive point is from the other line that runs vertically from 6 o'clock to 12 o'clock, 12 being at the top. Okay, that line is the Capricorn at the top, the Cancer at the bottom. And by the way, the first on the left side is Aries, and on the right is Libra. Okay, and so the zodiac is subdivided vertically and horizontally in that respect, and those are the most powerful points in the chart. And so the Capricorn is at the top. Capricorn is second only to the first house cusp in its position of power and its relationship to anyone's chart, whether it be or anything's chart, whether it be a country or a person or the beginning of your job or whatever. Like I said, you can do a chart for anything that has a beginning, okay? And so he elaborates on this a little bit further in another video that I'm going to play next. Now, also, too, Pluto moved into Capricorn last year, not this year. I failed to mention that before this started. So ultimately, if you look back over the course of the last year and you see all of the things that have changed, and in particular, these movements that we're involved in, whether it be the Patriot Movement, the so-called Truther Movement, or whatever, the Nationalist Movement, you can see how things have changed. And you can see, as Mike has said before, they're starting to realize some things, and we are making things happen. So this next one is called Pluto and Capricorn, Money, Power, and Revolution. And it's just a little bit longer than that last one, so let me get this one going.
Hello, everyone. Welcome. Tonight, I wanted to present my thoughts on where all the turbulence that we are presently experiencing in the world is coming from, where it might be going, and when we might expect to reach some kind of peak or turning point. As I have in the recent past, I'd like to focus tonight on Pluto's transit of Capricorn, or more broadly, Pluto's transit of the Capricorn-Cancer axis. Now, if you think of history as a pendulum, historical events as being driven by a pendulum from one extreme to another, from one phase to another, Pluto is the spring, the mainspring that is driving that pendulum. And the Capricorn Cancer axis is that vertical point, the vertical midpoint through which the pendulum swings as it moves us definitively from one phase of history to another. If you look back through history at the times when Pluto was transiting Capricorn, or across the zodiac, it was transiting Cancer, you will see that the world experienced seminal events, or threshold events, or you might say trigger events. These are events that made a mark at the time. They were noticed broadly, widely, but they led on directly and demonstrably directly to other larger events which ultimately transformed world culture and society. I have chosen a few events from Pluto's more recent transits of Capricorn and Cancer to illustrate our discussion tonight. There are some things I think we should keep in mind as we look at these examples. There is nothing in the least trivial or small scale about the events that Pluto causes when it is in Capricorn and Cancer. These events involve vast sums of money, vast numbers of people, great expanses of land. They involve political power and warfare, and they usually, if not always, involve large, high-level principles that people are unwilling or unable to to compromise, and for which they are willing to spill blood. Also, by making a note of where exactly Pluto was when these events occurred, and noting when Pluto will either be back at those locations or make a major aspect to those locations, we can gain some idea of when new threshold events, new turning points are likely to occur, or when events that we are now experiencing will finally reach a climax or a turning point. Looking at these events one at a time, we can say that the Boston Tea Party triggered a series of protests and led on to a series of events that ultimately led to the American War of Independence. Pluto will conjoin that spot. It will revisit its location at the time of the Boston Tea Party in April 2018. Our next example is the Declaration of Independence in 1776. Whatever you might think of the United States or its current policies, I think it's clear that since its founding, the world has really never been quite the same. Pluto will revisit its location at the time of the Declaration of Independence in February 2022. Our next example is the stock market crash of October 1929, the crash that triggered a global depression that lasted for the better part of a decade. Pluto will oppose that position in April of 2017. You can see that our next selection there is Pluto's location in Cancer at the beginning of the New Deal in March 1933. The New Deal was basically the creation of what we came to understand as the great social safety net. Social Security, unemployment insurance, and a host of other programs that lifted the United States out of the Depression and set in place programs that would prevent the country from ever falling into such a serious depression again, or at least that's what was hoped. Pluto will oppose its position at the time of the beginning of the New Deal in April 2018. I also wanted to take just a moment to point out that Pluto's position at the time of the Boston Tea Party was exactly opposite the position it occupied when in Cancer at the time of the New Deal. So when, on April 2018, Pluto rejoins its position at the time of the Boston Tea Party, it will also be opposing its position at the time of the New Deal. So in April of 2018, I think we can expect to see some fairly dramatic political and economic events. I think those few examples fairly clearly and fairly convincingly showed the kind of event, the kind of turbulent, transforming, often violent events that Pluto's transits of Capricorn and Cancer bring about. I think it is also apparent, if you paid attention to the dates, that Pluto will hit these points, will revisit these points toward the end of the next decade, toward the end of the teens, and the beginning of the 20s. So we have a decade or so to prepare. Right now, I think it's a little too early to draw any firm conclusions about what is likely to happen. On the other hand, I think the astrological evidence is pretty solid. We're headed into changeful and revolutionary times. Thank you. Good night. We'll see you again.
Well, I think that says it all, doesn't it? Are Mike's words prophetic, or are Mike's words prophetic? So there you have it, from a third party, not related to any of us, not part of the nationalist movement, anything of such nature. And so that alone, like I said at the earlier part of the show, I wanted to demonstrate this through what the words of other astrologers say. And he's not the only one. There are some other videos on YouTube, for example, that discuss this, and there are plenty of articles on the internet about it. And what I want to do on the next show this coming Friday is to read you one of those. And what I want to do now, though, is I want to go ahead and play. We've got about 23 minutes left. I want to try and play at least two more of these. And these have to do with Uranus entering into Aries. Now, this began in 2008 when Uranus entered into Aries. And so, you know, if it takes 7 years, 7 to 8 years to transit each sign, well, then that's approximately 2015. So we still have a few more years into this. And he has some things to say about that as well that I think are rather interesting. Now, a couple of these videos have a little bit of silence at the beginning and end. I was just more concerned with getting these things uploaded and then dealing with a little bit of silence. So I'm going to go ahead and play what he has to say about the entrance of Uranus into the sign of Aries. A little bit of silence. He's got a video presentation, so you'll see, if you were watching the video, you'd see it. It will begin shortly. It's playing.
Okay. Hello, everyone. Welcome to my video on Uranus in Aries. Actually, the second video I've done. Okay. This video is my effort using the basic tenets of astrology to try to explain what we're heading into and why I think times are about to change. Now, I've made some historical statements in here. These are not intended to be definitive, comprehensive statements about the nature of what happened. They're really intended to illustrate, to make clear where I'm coming from. The truth is that all kinds of events take place all the time, all over the place, that there's never a point in history where a certain kind of thing just stops dead, and another time in history where a certain kind of thing begins. That doesn't happen. We're talking about averages. And during the 50 to 60 year period that we are headed into, the kinds of events I describe are going to peak. Okay, let's check out these graphics. When it comes to the transits of Uranus, you want to pay attention to the rulership of the house signs. The first seven signs of the zodiac really govern the personal, the grassroots, the community, the close-up and personal part of the horoscope chart. The heavenly bodies that govern these first seven signs are all relatively quick-moving, fast-moving planets. Mars, Venus, Mercury, the Moon, the Sun, they all zip around the zodiac at a comparatively fast clip. Uranus spends 7 years in each of these signs. While Uranus is in these signs, the governing planets of these signs become ambassadors of Uranus. They carry Uranus's energy around the zodiac, or more accurately, they carry a blend of energy, their own energy, that of Uranus, and that of the sign that they govern. If, as is the case with the rulers of the first seven signs, they move quickly around the zodiac, then this particular combination of energies, the Uranian, the energy of the sign, the sign of the ruler. This energy is spread quickly and widely around the zodiac. The years affected by this part of Uranus's cycle are years in which people become the agents of change. They become the subject or the target of change. They become intimately, thoroughly, deeply involved in the process of historical change. And because the rulers of these signs move so quickly, the entire zodiac just becomes drenched, permeated with the energies of change, transformation, reform, and so on. And indeed, if you look at the years during which Uranus was in these signs in the last century, you will see that there were people, huge numbers of people in motion. We saw the Great Depression, which moved people around nations, within nations, across national borders. It just moved people around immensely. There was the Dust Bowl, another event that set people in motion. There was World War II. We had countless millions of people moving and involved in the process of change. And later in this cycle, you had the historical, epical protest movements of the 60s, which set people marching once again all over the world. During the same period of history, there were revolutionary wars, there were wars of liberation, there were civil wars, there were uprisings of all kinds. People in their millions were in motion, demanding change, making change, being changed. It was a time when the forces of change did indeed permeate the world, including and especially the great masses of humanity. Then you have five signs whose rulers are fairly slow, comparatively slow, in their movement. When Uranus is transiting this part of the zodiac, the pace of change tends to slow down. The locus of the energies of change shifts from the people, from the grassroots, to those at the top of the power structure. And if you think back to the period when Uranus switched from the fast signs to the slow signs, the pace of change did slow down. And this change was brought about mostly by the actions of high-level politicians, government officials, and so on. Richard Nixon, who left office in 1974 as Uranus was making the change, was a transitional figure, but I think you can see that he definitely was a behind-the-scenes, smoke-filled room, top-down sort of fellow.
Okay, this is a two-part video. Again, the next video of this, of what I'll pick up right where he left off in the next one, has a little bit of silence in front of it, and so I'm going to go ahead and hit play, and I'll talk to you a little bit while I'm waiting to get this thing going, which doesn't seem to want to cooperate again, having the same effect that I did on this first show I tried to do this. Come on, button. Let's work. Okay, I'll get this thing going here in just a second. I'm determined to play this video. Okay, here we go. And a little bit of silence, and he'll pick up right where he left off. Someone's messing with us. So I think there's a good reason. And after listening to these, you'll certainly understand. anytime. Right about now.
Richard Nixon, who left office in 1974 as Uranus was making the change, was a transitional figure, but I think you can see that he definitely was a behind-the-scenes, smoke-filled room, top-down sort of fellow. Jimmy Carter, he liked to tinker with the plumbing of the government. He liked to get in there and micromanage, work from behind the scenes. He definitely, although he came from among the people, he had a very popular sort of appeal. He actually was another top-down administrative type. We know, of course, that Ronald Reagan clearly loved the concentration of power and began to change things through deregulation, through tax cuts. He pushed through a lot of changes at high governmental levels. The people were also kind of taking a back seat. You'll notice the popular reform movements of the previous decade had pretty much gone silent. Bill Clinton, again, welfare reform. He tried to reform health care. He didn't really get out there and stir up the masses. He worked on their behalf. But once again, his mode was top-down, ruled by government decree, by the passage of laws and programs. George Bush, another top-down kind of fellow who emulated the Reagan model in many respects, more deregulation, more tax cuts, a greater concentration of power in the hands of a few, and things like that. Very top-down fellow. And we come now to another transitional figure, I'm assuming, Barack Obama. He is starting out his office, his term of office, as a top-down kind of fellow, reforming, re-regulating, and so on from the top down. But I would predict that as his term, and possibly a second term, progresses, you will see the people rising up, both in response, in a positive response to what Barack Obama does, but also as agents of change themselves to demand that Obama's administration start doing certain kinds of things. I've created a little animation here that illustrates the astrological side of this. You see Uranus slowly moving through the sign of Pisces, and Neptune, the ruler of Pisces, inching through the sign of Aquarius. The energies of change tend to be concentrated into a point source. The impetus for change never really takes hold. We just have an occasional burst of reform. The impetus tends to come from the top. And generally, things just don't change that much. Compare that to what happens when Uranus is transiting Aries. While Uranus is in Aries for 7 years, the planet Mars will go around the zodiac 3.5 times, roughly speaking. Now, that means that the combination of Martian and Uranian energy will, in fact, completely saturate the zodiac. Indeed, the entire zodiac tends to become an engine of change. Contrast that with what happened when Uranus was in Pisces. Neptune all but crept through a relative handful of degrees during 7 years, and all of that changeful Uranian energy was bottled up. Maybe I should apologize. This animation's a little crude. We're still working on the software to make nice animations. Now, it's well worth pointing out that Uranus is going to be in the so-called fast signs for for the next 50 years. So during the next 50 years, uranium energy is going to saturate the zodiac. It will, over and over again, in countless ways, day after day, year after year, motivate people at the grassroots level to empower themselves and to demand change. And because just about every nook and cranny in the zodiac will be so thoroughly saturated with the energies and the forces of change, we are likely to get a lot of change. For better or for worse, all resistance to change will ultimately fail. And a little informational note, Uranus will transition into Aries over the next year or so. It will first enter Aries at the end of May. It will remain there until early August when it retrogrades out. It will re-enter Aries March of next year, and it will remain in Aries until it transitions out during 2018 through 2019. As I said in my previous video with respect to Chiron and Uranus, do some research on your own. This is going to make a difference. And to know what that difference is going to be for you, you're really going to have to Google some stuff. I will say that you probably all want to learn how to relax a lot more, because an active Uranus makes for a very nervous time. It's really going to put us through our paces, nervous-wise. Okay, thank you. We'll see you. Bye-bye.
Okay, there you have it again. Change, change, change. I think I got my years probably wrong on when it entered into Aries. It probably was 2010, especially since he said it would exit Aries in 2018 or 2019. So I was getting confused there. He has one more video here, and that should take us pretty much out to the end of the show. And my closing comments will probably wind up being in the archives. But I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to play this next one if I get it to cooperate. And actually, he did this video first, and this is still Uranus enters Aries. So without further ado, all right, let's see here. Come on, cooperate again. I'm getting the same effect I had when I did the first show. You hit the button, nothing happens. There we go. A little silence in the front.
Hello, everyone. Welcome. This video is about Uranus's transit of Aries, which will take about 7 years and will begin in 2010. This transit will bring about yet another phase of this big transition, this big transformation the world is currently undergoing. Uranus in Aries will bring about a transformation of world consciousness, of the spirituality and the personality of the people who inhabit this globe, who share this globe with us. Uranus's transit of Aries will begin on May 28th, 2010. Perhaps the most dramatic event that will transpire during this transit will be Uranus's square of the planet Pluto. It will be exact 7 times between June 2012 and March 2015. So something between 3 and 4 years of this 7-year transit will be dominated by Uranus square Pluto energy. Essentially, this chart is telling us that there will be, on the individual level, a spiritual and psychological transformation that will lead to a global revolutionary social change. In order to ground this discussion in more concrete, specific terms, I have based it on a composite chart for Uranus's entrance into Aries and the U.S. natal chart. The thing that really jumps right out at you about this chart are the planetary high explosives planted squarely in those parts of the chart that govern the personality and spirituality. Perhaps the first thing you notice is the Pluto-Moon conjunction in the 12th house, very, very close to the ascendant. This very powerful Moon-Pluto conjunction is not simply at a very sensitive point in the chart, throwing energies into the entire chart. It is at that point in the chart where the psyche stores its deepest, darkest, most troubling secrets, its strongest, most secret yearnings, its complexes, right where that part of the human psyche begins to spill over into the conscious public identity, into the personality. In essence, we see this volcanic Plutonian force pushing all of the psyche's deepest, darkest, most complicated secrets and private thoughts into the public arena through the involvement of Pluto specifically and Capricorn and the Moon. We can see that this eruption of normally hidden psychic stuff is also bound up with issues of public societal power. The second thing that really kind of jumps right out at you is Uranus down there close to the cusp of the fourth house on the so-called Imum Cheli, basically the bottom of the chart. This part of our chart governs or houses the roots of our psyche in family, race, country, in tradition, in the land, in history. It represents those things that tie us to the physical, emotional, concrete details of our personal ancestral community history. And what you see there is Uranus. Basically, it is blasting us free of those personal historical roots, freeing us to do something new, to go to some new place. After all this drama, all these dramatic revelations, I want to emphasize that Jupiter is right there in the same sign as Uranus, helping it out, helping us out, radiating supportive, facilitating, protective vibes into this potentially very difficult, painful process. Also, you want to notice that Jupiter and Uranus, the Moon and Pluto, are in basic, if broad, trine relationship. They're both in Earth signs. So all is not storm and tension and difficulty. It's certainly a very momentous process, but there are very, very strong positive forces at work too. Well, there you have it. Yet another phase in this very, very dramatic transition that the world is undergoing, and a phase which promises to be quite dramatic in and of itself. there will be more phases of this transition that happen concurrently with the one we just discussed and afterwards. But I think we've given ourselves enough to think about for one evening. Thank you. We'll see you next time.
Okay. My purpose in playing these were multiple. However, I wanted to get your attention. I hope these audio portions of these videos have done that. And so you can see the role that astrology plays in its ability to predict the future. And I won't say specific events, but it predicts energies. I would never like to use astrology for the purposes of saying this will happen, that will happen, et cetera, et cetera. But what you're dealing with are generally energies that will point to a particular direction. And that's how you should always view this. There's always been this deal of, oh, well, don't go outside today because, you know, it's my horoscope says, you know, this, that, and the other. Of course, first of all, that's sun sign astrology, which is a bunch of hooey. And second of all, that's you can't predict events. So had I known that there was going to be a robbery at the Starbucks I went to, I would not have probably gone. But then again, these things happen whether you want them to or not. So had I not gone to Starbucks, what would have been the alternative? Just like the guy that I was talking about in the first show who had died on the day that he was scheduled for execution on death row in Texas. And so, anyway, there you have it. I have other comments that I will probably wind up making on these videos in my next show, but I'm going to go ahead and close this out at this time, and we'll pick up where we left off on Friday, and hopefully we will have all of the Skype issues worked out at that time. So anyway, what happens if we don't prevail over these tyrants? I'm going to close out with my usual final thoughts. The truth is hate only to those who hate the truth. A noble society is not ruled by might, but by law. Preserving your culture isn't hate. It's about survival. You do not have the right to never be offended. The fact that they want your guns is all the more reason to have them. There are no illegal guns, only illegal gun laws. Anti-gun is anti-white. Anti-Semitism is a disease. You catch it from Jews. Free men aren't equal, and equal men aren't free. Odin demands that you grow the fuck up. Distinct peoples have a right to remain distinct. Multiracialism is not self-government. Forced association isn't freedom. 1488. So until next time, hail Satan.